This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
The New Zealand Young Writers Festival welcomes young writers aged 15 to 35 of all kinds to celebrate a diverse range of wordsmithing, including slam poetry, playwriting, songwriting, short fiction, novels, zines, screenwriting, poetry, journalism, blogging, critical content creation, podcasts, review writing, and more. It's Aotearoa's only literary festival focused solely on young writers, and it's held right here in Otipoti, Dunedin. This live-recorded podcast series from the 2025 New Zealand Young Writers Fest is brought to you by Otago Access Radio and supported by Dunedin UNESCO City of Literature. Join us in celebrating Aotearoa's next generation of literary talent.
Feathers in Flight, voices of the next generation. In this special mix and mingle reading event, our young writers take the stage to share original work, from poetry to storytelling, lyrical, personal, political, and everything in between. Each piece offers a glimpse into the future of Aotearoa literature and showcases a diversity of style, identity, and imagination. The event highlights the vibrancy of Aotearoa's next generation of storytellers. Hosted by acclaimed writer and performer Josiah Morgan, this is a rare opportunity to feel the creative pulse of our future literary leaders. This event contains some strong language and themes that may not be suitable for all audiences.
Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Ko Kate Schrader Tokuingua, here co-director of the Dunedin Fringe Arts Trust. Welcome. Haere mai, welcome. My name is Kate Schrader. I'm co-director of the Dunedin Fringe Arts Trust, which presents the New Zealand Young Writers Festival. Thank you. Wow, that was so impromptu. Thank you all so much for being here to celebrate the next generation of Aotearoa's incredible literary talent. Now, I've just had the immense privilege of spending the last 3 days with these amazing young writers at the inaugural New Zealand Young Writers Festival Wānaka at Puketaraki Marae in beautiful Karatane. And let me tell you, the future is so insanely bright. I know I'm not going to make a sunglasses joke. That's too much. Thank you for the pity laugh. That makes me feel really good about myself. Now, I must first acknowledge mana whenua, kai tahu, wai taha, ka te mamoe, on whose land we do all this amazing, this work we're so privileged to do. I'm not a writer, but I gave it a crack to find the words to describe how incredible the experience was of being at Puketaraki. And it was really because of the manaakitaka of our incredible hosts. So thank you particularly to Suzanne Ellison, Aroha Ellison, and her epic Ringawera team, Mātua John Broughton, Mātua Justin, Pōtama and his beautiful tamariki, as well as Rohina Scott Fife, Anthony Deka, and Nick Tipper. Oh, and Gypsy the dog. Yeah. Kaha mihi nui ki a koutou. It was such an incredible experience, and I know we will all treasure it all our lives. I'd like to mihi to the most important group, if I may, of people for the Young Writers Festival, which is the young writers themselves. These guys over here. Woo-hoo! Yep. What a warm, passionate, smart, funny, beautiful group of people. I mean, every time they looked at me during the Wānaka, I was crying because they're so. It just gave me such faith in the future of this country. You are all absolutely extraordinary, and not just because of your writing, which is vital, and not because of your talent, which is endless, but because of who you are as people. Keep sharing your words with the world because we really need them. Now, it is my great pleasure and privilege to introduce our MC for the evening, Josiah Morgan. Yay! Bye!
Kia ora. I'm going to stand over here with this cool mic, just because it means that I can walk up to the stage at the end of things and then disappear kind of easily. Kia ora koutou, my name is Josiah. I whakapapatu, kaitahu, and Ngati Maniapoto. Thank you. I sort of acknowledge all of you and the festival itself. Kate already covered a lot of the things that you need to know and all of the kind of background for this event, but I just wanted to say that one of the things that is so special about a Wānaka context and a festival context is that we sometimes remember It gives us the opportunity to remember that we are more powerful in community and that community is a place that writing comes from. It's not this little thing that happens in isolation. And I just wanted to particularly acknowledge Rohina, who is not here tonight, Ruby and Nick Tipa as well for stepping in this week and kind of really managing a lot of that space, holding that mahi and taking care of so many of our kaituhi. I'm not gonna keep us here for too long, but I am gonna do the traditional thing of doing a sacrificial poem before our lineup begins. And before I read the sacrificial poem, so this afternoon Ruby hosted a workshop called Tupuna Talk, and at the end of that workshop, Grace kind of described one of the outcomes of that workshop as being unalienating ourselves from narratives where our ancestors are kind of forgotten, or unalienating ourselves from capitalist and colonialist narratives. The poem that I'm about to read to you is sort of about that, but it's about that in reverse. It's a sort of tricky poem, and I normally don't tell people what it's about. They just have to think about it themselves, but I'll be real explicit. This poem's about colonization, and it's called It Could Happen to You Too. An ugly, queer little man walked into a bar. He placed a table under his tongue. He carried the table under his tongue. Though the man was bipedal, he had six legs then. He carried chapter 2 under his tongue. He carried a tiled roof under his tongue, diarrhea under his tongue. He carried his tongue under his tongue, a camera under his tongue, Atlantis, beauty, a chamber pot, hung history under his tongue, 20 Hillcrest Place under his tongue. He carried his memories under his tongue. Then the man reached out. He picked the bartender up and put the bartender under his tongue. He put an apology under his tongue. He carried the profane exhibition under his tongue. The man then put the bar under his tongue before swallowing, grinding his teeth a few times, and spitting the whole mess back up. There was no bar left for him to leave from. Kia ora. Tonight is really about celebrating that sense of community that comes and emerges from writers existing in a space together. It's so great to see such a lovely, warm, generous, large audience here. I'm going to hand straight over to our first kaituhi from the Wanaka cohort this year. I'm going to hand over to Stella Weston.
This piece is called Girlhood. Gaia Hermanson has always loved her name. She has always loved her bedroom, the way the sun slides in and three of the walls are windows. She has always loved her mother. She has always loved her sister. She has always loved her best friend. All of these things feel the same. She loves them in the same way. Amber says that isn't right. Amber says you can't love the sun through the windows the same way you love your mother. Gaia says you absolutely can. They carry on with their list. Gaia loves her white linen duvet cover, how it feels when she has managed to stay out of bed all day and then can finally wrap herself up, how safe it makes her feel. Amber says that isn't love. Gaia loves chocolate chips and eating them by the handful from the bag in the pantry. She loves cows, the fluffy brown ones they had before they sold the farm, the Highland cattle with the huge curling horns and the thick coats. She loves the small plastic statue of one of these cows on her bookshelf. She loves her whole bookshelf. More trinkets and photo albums than books. She loves her style, her vibe, the sense of comfort she has fostered in herself. Not exactly her body, but the rest of her. Amber says you can't love a vibe. Gaia says, shut up, Amber. Her vibe was a birthright the second her mum named her Gaia. Amber agrees, because obviously, but that doesn't mean you can love it. Gaia says they're meant to be here for photography. Gaia doesn't love being Amber's model. She doesn't like looking at the photos of herself, the way her chin juts out, the way her eyebrows are always pulled down, the way that one tooth is pointed when she laughs properly. Gaia does love Amber's folio board for her NCEA photography. She loves her theme, girlhood. Her teacher had hated the theme for the first term, telling Amber that if she brought in any more photos of tampons and chains, she would be removed from the class. She said that if Amber didn't use a model, she wouldn't meet the criteria. Amber had claimed that she was unwilling to conform to what she described as the compliance and subsequent desecration of art in society. Gaia didn't even know what that meant and wasn't sure that it meant anything, but she was running out of tampons to lend Amber. So Gaia told her she was being dumb. And so Amber had started photographing Gaia. Gaia didn't like her chin in the photos, but she would die for Amber. Now, in Gaia's room, with the windows, with the sun, with the hanging disco ball casting flecks of light around the room, Amber pulls up the digital version of her folio board, a white rectangle speckled with girls that aren't Gaia. With the deadline for her folio in a month, Amber has amassed a beautiful collection. There's an image of a group of girls that Gaia only recognizes from Amber's Instagram, sitting on the floor in a sunlit kitchen, holding wine glasses full of bright purple and green cruises. One that Amber had said symbolized growing up, of Amber's niece in a field that seemed to go on forever, clutching a small bunch of dandelions, a storm cloud in the distance. Gaia had said that that was just too obvious, then thought that growing it up isn't exactly subtle. Another is of Amber's friend from netball, in the lake in her uniform after they won their final, half out of the water, hands pushing back her hair, grinning wildly, her uniform plastered to her. Another is of girls in a bathroom at Amber's school, their skirts folded up, shirts half unbuttoned, all sharing the mirror after a gym class, fixing hair, sharing perfume, replacing mascara. There's a space on the right side of the board. Amber says it's for the finale. She needs a full circle back to where it started. She claims this is bigger than her photography mark. It's feminism, art, beauty, girlhood. Gaia has never thought of grape cruises as beauty or feminism, but she wants to be on Amber's board more than she hates being photographed. Thank you.
Stella Weston. Stella, I think there was a phenomenal example of the way that quite often humor comes through specificity in writing. It will have been clear through that work and through the sacrificial poem that we're going to be traversing a lot of territory tonight. The poets can offer trigger warnings if needed, but in general, just be aware we're going to go on a whole wee adventure through a bunch of different voices and a bunch of different worlds. I'm now going to hand over to our next writer, Helena Mayer.
Kia ora, my name is Helena. This poem I also wanted to read in response to Ruby's workshop earlier today. It's a conversation with a pre-Christian German deity named Holder, who is from where my family is from. And Holder, while you are rooted in the lakes of another land, do you also visit the waters of other places? And might you, unlike us of another breath, know how to be a better guest? And if you live at the bottom of bodies of water, Holder, do you follow me through every body of water that I swim in, my own body, or rather my borrowed body? And in that case, Holder, is it right that what I should say is not that I am going to the beach, but rather that I am going to pray? And Holder, should I pray like the bodies before and the bodies after, for a kind of creation, not of my womb letting go, but of my hands, so I might hold you gently? And is it true, Holder, that you shook three rocks far taller than me from your shoe? And Holder, if you are so tall, might you come to gather me into your hands? And Holder, when you collect the souls of babies, the ones who have died before they were named, the ones who came before their time, and hold them in your lake until they are ready to return in a different form, how heavy are they? And if you gather the souls of not yet babies, Holder, does that mean you also gather the blood which draws a revolution through my body? and Holda the other names, Holle, Hel, Perchta, Berchta, Hecate, Frigg, Diana, are they your sisters, or older or younger versions of yourself, or the names others called you when they didn't understand? And I heard, Holda, that I must finish my spinning before you pass. But Holda, the seasons are the opposite here, so I don't know when you might come by. My spinning is so tangled, and will you punish me for not having finished when I have been weaving words instead? And Holda, I heard that I must finish cleaning by the time that you pass, but Holda, the dishes grow from the bench, and the worn clothes grow from the floor, and the mold grows from the walls, and the spiders grow from the ceiling, so will you punish me when I am doing my best? And is it true, Holda, that you lead the wild beasts through the sky at the wild hunt, a gathering of spirits at winter solstice? Or is this the invention of the Christians and the Brothers Grimm to turn you to evil? And Holda, how is it possible that it can rain when you do your laundry deep underwater? And Holda, your face, is it true that one half is young and the other old, your very flesh in the circle of time? And Holda, can you hear me when I speak in this tongue? And is it okay, Holda, for me to pull your name over my body? And forgive me for asking, but Holda, do you have a lover? And if you do, Holda, what is her name? Thank you.
That was Helena Mayer. What a beautiful command of voice and imagery there. I'm going to hand over to our next poet, Nadia Solomon.
Kia ora, everybody. This poem is a mihi to my boyfriend, who I miss so much. I haven't been away from him for this long, like 5 years. And it's for his mother, Sharon, who he lost at 14 and for a little while there lost himself. I'm just going to adjust this. Like that. Awesome. Trigger warning, grief. What if grief is not love persevering? My grief looks like anger. Tastes like pain. They tell me it is love, but I'm not sure if love is the name for this rage that is screaming through my veins. They say grief is a longing that cannot be contained, but I feel like I'm running and stuck in one place. I feel like my future's been taken away. If I loved like this to someone alive, you'd tell me to run, you'd help me to hide. But because someone's dead, I have to keep it inside and only speak of the really good times. They say grief is the love that I could never give. But maybe I'm just angry at the life we never lived. Mad at the clocks and the calendars too. Upset at every birthday that I celebrate without you. They tell me you're always with me, but see, the thing is, you're not. That's the whole reason we've even come to this spot. And I know my friends have the nicest intentions, but I think it's about time that we mentioned that grief can be explosive. So painful and loud, it can make you want to kill everyone in a crowd because they don't understand how you're feeling right now. And it feels so unfair to see them moving around as if there is nothing weighing them down, knowing there is always something weighing them down. And all I can do is scream in my car and drive it really fast to places really far. And imagine I'll find the place where you are along the way. Sometimes grief is love. Sometimes it's just pain. Thank you.
That was Nadia Solomon. Something very special about gathering in a shared kind of space like this and hearing words is that it allows us the opportunity to share feelings that are often private. And that's the case for everyone as writers as well. It's often something that is private and then we get to share with each other in these sorts of contexts. I'm going to hand over now to our next writer, Tamisha Edebowale.
Hi, everyone. The poems I write are generally quite short, so I put three together. So enjoy. So the first one is called Borderline. The Uber driver and I share the same border. This makes us kin. The road is dark, the city unfamiliar. She drives like she has done this forever. Maybe she has. Our border is thin, stretched out like peeled yam skin. She does not ask where I am from. She does not need to. Near the sea, waves murmur Yoruba. The sound reaches, but does not call me back. She tosses her immigration papers into the wind. Salt, like memory, never truly leaves the body. I glance sideways, expecting recognition. Instead, only my reflection, distorted in the window. Dunedin at night is a cage of ribs. The streets are hollow with beer bottles decorating houses. On one hand, Wole Soyinka. In the other, Janet Frame. A life jacket, a compass. I grip them both. She lets go. The second one is called Tinder. So... He said he liked your accent, then asked where you were really from, and you laughed because the wine was $40 and you had already ordered fries. The street light outside flickered like it knew what you were doing, sitting across from a man who thought Johannesburg was in Europe and sang praises for Nelson Mandela. Dunedin is a city with wind in its mouth and questions under its breath. You walk up hills both ways into rooms where no one looks like you, but everyone claims to have seen you before in some other place they cannot name. You smile when he mispronounces your name, not out of kindness, but because correcting him is exhausting, and you have groceries to carry and laundry to fold. By the end of the night, you do not remember his name, only the way the glass felt in your hand, and how the air smelled like cold salt, and something about loneliness that had nothing to do with being alone. This final one, I wrote it after Mersu, a character from Albert Camus' book, The Stranger. Yes. I wrote it just based on how I'm feeling with all the stuff going on in the world. So it's called The Sun Will Not Apologize. I stopped flinching at the headlines somewhere between War Number 10 and a scandal involving a man I was never meant to admire. The tea cooled beside me, again indifferent to the hour, to the way I watched it. Someone shouted about justice on the street, and their voice cracked, and I thought they should have brought water. This is not numbness, not even surrender. It is the flat line that arrives when the orchestra keeps playing, but the conductor has left the stage. I feel nothing but the weight of light pressing the wall, trying, as always, to make something beautiful out of dust. The sun does not care, and neither now do I. Thank you.
That was Tamisha Edebowale. Something that I think is so extraordinary about great poetry and great writing in general is that it has this element of surprise where something kind of spirals away from where we expect it to go, or an image or an object or an idea doesn't behave the way that we normally expect it to. And I found that in all three of those pieces. I'm going to hand over now to our next writer, Holly Russell.
Q Kia ora. I equally write little poems, so I also have three altogether, and the first one is called It's So Nice to See You. Did you think I meant something by tying my hair up at coffee? You would have been caught off guard if I had said, undress me, the way you would a mandarin, one whose rind is already loosened from itself, that thin layer of air separating skin and flesh. How do I make myself look lived in? I heard real estate agents bake a ramekin of vanilla essence in the oven, put magazines beside the toilet and dog-ear the pages you'd find interesting, vacuum the carpets but leave a few mandarin peels on the counter and a hair tie beside the bathroom sink. My second one is called What I Miss About Summer. Cherries. Stinging saltwater eyes, peachy skin, thirsting for cold aloe vera, the feeling of a paddle pop melting down my sweaty wrist. Evenings arriving without goose pimples. Incense hanging in the air without a wind to whisk it away. Flowering pohutukawa trees, red stamens blanketing your windshield, sitting under the warm, fiery glow, spilling G&T over your coppery of Wuthering Heights, hanging it up to dry on the clothesline beside our T-shirts wet only around the tits, your face in the 3 o'clock sun, chocolate hair melting, dripping down your neck, nose-stained pink, tiny lipstick kisses, freckles left spilt across your cheeks till autumn came back to pick them up. And my last one is called How It Feels. It's like nostalgia marketing for products conceived long before we were. Youth flocking to cheap flip phones, the comfort of vintage leather jackets with pockets too small to fit an iPhone in them. It's like cradling the egg of a stegosaurus, fossilized shell separating foreign bodies, supporting the weight of a Jurassic ghost and caressing its unfulfilled potential, the life and death of an entire species. It's like crossing valleys carved by ice, glaciers nearly 2.9 billion years old, standing atop podiums of mantle and crust, lifting us triumphantly toward the sky, the way a church's steeple reaches for God. Thank you.
That was Holly Russell. I really love the specificity and the intensity of the imagery that came through those works in communicating their ideas. We're currently halfway through the first section, so we've just heard from five poets. We've got five more for you before we take a wee break. I shouldn't call everyone a poet. Some people write prose. That's the poetry like brainworms coming through at my end. I had a thought, and it's gone. I'm going to hand over now to our next poet, Mariwa Ki Te Rangi Paiko.
Kia ora. My name is Mariwa Ki Te Rangi Paiko. I'm very fortunate to have come from Wellington to here, so I'm very grateful for the team who have made this wanaka like absolutely amazing. Just a FYI, I read my titles at the end. I think the only trigger warning is my ego gets hurt, so we'll go. The way her smile is contagious. You can't help yourself but stare. Time together felt like a few minutes, although hours had passed. She was true to herself, so was I. Months went by, we saw each other again, that contagious smile. All I could do was stare. I'm seeing someone, he. My mind went blank, nodding, smiling, trying not to let my face say what I'm feeling. Clenched heart with jealousy brewing. He. Him? Questioning what he brought to the table when I was asked to leave. Contagious smile. Kia ora.
That was Mariwa Ki Te Rangi Paiko. It's amazing how much you can evoke an idea of people, persons, and speakers in such a small amount of time, eh? I remembered the thought as well. The thought is that for a lot of the people on this lineup tonight, this is their first time ever reading work in front of an audience. So isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? I'm going to hand over to our next poet. I'm a fan. I became a fan of this person before I met them with a poem that was on the spin-off. I'm handing over to Jordan Irvine.
I'm nervous, but now I've said it and it's cool, you know? I wrote this one today thanks to Ruby's workshop, so I was dedicated to Ruby and all these guys. Give them another round of applause. They're dope. This one's called Boy. In 2010, I was too young to watch Boy. I wanted to watch it because Michael Jackson only just died the year before when I was 6, and it changed my life. Three years pass, and now I can finally see this movie about a boy. Not the Hugh Grant movie about a boy. It's called Boy, and it's about this boy whose name is Boy, who liked Michael Jackson just like me. In a small town just like me, poor like me, surrounded by adults with big bottles like me. A boy finding out his dad is human and how he wants to get out of here, but can't imagine a world without it. It's about a boy who learns responsibility and compassion and love, and it was written by a boy. Since 2010, it took 12 years to find out I wasn't a boy, but I see that film and I feel like that boy and feel hurt that the boy was created by a childish man who was not compassionate. Hine e hine plays, and I close my eyes like that boy and let myself fall, but no, I'll be caught by a new generation of boys. Thank you. So that was poem number one. I have two more. This next one is dedicated to Liz Breslin. Everyone clap for Liz Breslin. Go buy their new book, Show You're Working Out, Dead Bird Books. It's really cool when you're writing something and you find someone else is writing about the same thing and you didn't even know it. You're just connected. Writers are always in conversations with each other. Writers wouldn't exist without other writers. So shout out writers, I guess. This is called New Zealanders for the Kids. New Zealanders for the Kids. Rain falls on the old stomping ground where boots are clogged with mud, spate-stained cushion seats, and I drink a small bottle of store-brand cola. Landers are shit, but Bender is in black now. Why do my parents hate John Key? It doesn't matter because I hate him now too. New Zealanders for the Kids. They're called fag and don't know what it means and don't know it should hurt more than it does. Better keep a stiff upper lip about it, though, and run it straight. The mild concussion will go away after we go to the dairy for a bag of crocodiles. There's nothing more New Zealand than that. New Zealanders for the Kids. I don't remember the last time I stepped on a field of concrete thanks to last night's frost. I don't drink piss, and those around me are fine with it, while I drink a bottle of name-brand cola. Landers are still shit, and I can't name any of them. I know why my parents hate John Key, and I wish I didn't. Thank you. Last one. I wasn't going to read this originally, but a bunch of these people liked one of the lines at least, and that's good enough for me. This is called I Didn't Finish. I was sitting on the toilet at my friend's place watching a bee die before I had sex with him. I listened to music thinking I wouldn't fall asleep. For the 2 hours I did, the weighted blanket pressed me closer to their body and then engulfed my phone that I spent 20 minutes looking for, trying not to wake them, only to see it was on the other side of the bed. I walk home, and a boy in front of me seems to be in no rush to eat his apple as it rains. I soak like sheets in a tub. A bike clicks along and sprays the cuff of my jeans. They stick to my harshly shaved legs. The rain flows by and moves on to the sea. Thank you.
That was Jordan Irvine. Something I love about writing, and particularly sharing writing in this context, is that we get to understand how the things that we watch and the things that we read and the things that people say to us, then we get to write from and through and sometimes to rewrite. And that's a quality I loved in those texts. We've got three more poets left in this half. I'm going to hand over to Afirenga Hepiri.
Kia ora te whānau, ko te Afirenga ho. Trigger warnings. I guess this is just an intense piece. I wrote this piece when I was trying to understand whiteness in Aotearoa and how to navigate that as a wahine Māori. And this piece is called Beware the White. Beware the white. Sheep. They follow their leader without question, hive mind, decide who lives, who dies, when, where, why is it always you? Why is it always you whose cries can only be like war? Don't they know? These hands don't kill, they split open skies. I have looked rangi in the eyes, stared into the soul of Matariki, wept with rona, my tears pull tides of pain in and out the chest of the oppressed. I am simply broken, ebbing and flowing with the suppression and revitalization and suppression of my language, anō, feeling my tongue claw its way up my throat, hoping to see the sun before it sets. Beware the white flag. Its surrender is untrue. Don't get too close with a few knots. Flags can become a noose, and what better victim than one brown and blue? How many prison cells does it take to contain a people? 52.5% and rising. Thank God for the crackdown on gangs. How many parties does it take to regress a people? 3. And their national disgrace. Pretend to put New Zealand first and act like a hero. How many men does it take to kill a people? 1 and all his endeavour. Beware the white. Sun. It is more destructive than you think. When something is hot, it burns red. When it is hotter, it burns white. Bright angel of light coming to you, cold and coiled, offering an apple in your own garden, promising worlds that cannot exist outside of white. You may not enter brown. Cleanse yourself, then try again. Cleanse yourself, then cross the threshold. Sacrifice yourself for a taste. Beware the white man who hears hood and thinks, oh, too, and thinks your cousins are now a character in his conversation, only welcome when you're a joke, and you're at uni and trying to write this poem and realise the white in the booth over is dick swinging over who's had it worse. I see no brown. I hear my people. I don't see my people. I pay the same tuition, but I do twice the work. I write with my left and defend with my right. Beware the white wolves. They move in groups. Their togetherness is called packs. Our togetherness is called gangs. As long as you are together, you are safe. As long as you are together, you are terrorists. As long as you are a threat to colonial legacy. The crown has commissioned your demise. You are not being hunted because you are Māori. You are being hunted because it is tradition, and we can't disturb that now, can we? If it is the way you have always done things, then let us be rigid in our ways as long as we preserve this perfect white. Beware the white teeth. They are only pearly until they bite, harmless until they sink into your skin. Nothing is more satiating than brown bodies turning red with blood, because red with patch can't be considered family when you look like that. Your moko need to learn that family looks right when family looks white. I turn to the brownness I was born of and let it wash over me, absolve me, resolve this conflict. Eeyore, What is it about my family that is such a far? No, beware the white waters. They rage and swallow you whole. Oceans carried you, and now they will suffocate you, and now they will suffocate you, and now Te Moana will be taken from you, and somehow their drills and oils belong, and now you will be given an anchor and told to float. Console the ghost of your nan as she mourns the waters that raised her. See the pipi drown in their own home. Wonder how it must feel. Realize you already recognize this feeling all too well. Succumb to the frothy swell of love and loss in Aotearoa. Love your home. Lose your land. Love it still. Climb the mountains. Drive up the steps. See more of the bays, the harbors, the awa that know your feelings all too well. Beware the white churches. Enter on your knees, bow at the altar and beg for God. Pray he has not forsaken thee. 10 Hail Marys, abstain from the sacrament for as long as you listen as the priest reminds you the atonement is for the righteous and you, sweet Samaritan, are the riotous. Draw your bucket from the well, but not too much, because even though you worked for this yourself, you don't get handouts. The taxpayer dollar is not for the hungry, but the holy, the hallowed, the white. Beware the white. The pure, pure white, oh so white virgin, white sacred, special, eternal, white divine right. Beware the white. Our moko are not safe in the arms of the white, 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 oh God. Oh mother, oh saviour, deliver us from this white.
It was Taffy Ranga Hippity. It takes a lot of craft and a lot of skill to translate feelings and ideas so big and nationally conscious and humanly conscious into a form that is legible and crafted like that. Two more poets to go. Our penultimate poet for this first half of the evening, it's Paige Walker.
Kia ora, everyone. I am one of those people that writes prose. So, yay. Hi, Emily. Hi, Melissa. Hi, Cam. Hi, Parisau. Hi, Kobe, wherever you guys are sitting. Thank you so much for being here. This is very much for you guys. And for anybody who's had a shitty therapist. Okay, this piece is called We Are Not Free. The arms of the wooden chair are worn. Pale blotches have formed under the weight of our arms, and there are tiny inflections where someone has scratched away the membrane. I prefer to dig around the seat. I know there is another right-handed client who feels the same. We tag-teamed the excavation of a thumb-sized pit over weeks of mandated sessions. Shuffling my hips, I take the puddle-patterned cushion with me and drape my body over the manchette. Ignoring the stale attempt at connection before me, I gaze at the nugget of milky pine. I'm here to see a doctor. Not just any old doctor, a psychiatrist. Tearing myself out of my pine trance, I investigate the topography of his office. Little has changed since last week. There's an oyster wall clock, but the time is 2 minutes behind. He keeps a lonely fern on the windowsill behind his desk. It could do with some water or some fresh air. The scent of ammonia lingers, trapped beneath beige wallpaper and fused within the porous red oak separating us. Air freshener couldn't hurt. It's like he's concerned I'll forget I'm in a hospital, and this is all very serious. I picture him on his hands and knees getting right into that grout. I jerk my head up to look at him. He's been staring at me, waiting for an answer. How do you feel? I copycat back to him, and he's given me nothing. I feel like hell, and I'm stuck here talking to a brick wall that charges $150 an hour after insurance. The frustration tumbles out of me, rustling the papers atop his desk. What am I supposed to do? I raise my hands to the heavens. The most reliable part of my life is my calculation of how long it'll take me to die if I never left my bed. An onslaught of images of Palestinian children join me for lunch, resembling the skeleton our science teacher hangs in their classroom. Rinsing away my day is futile. My tears flow with my shower stream when I think of Congolese children who are forced to destroy their body and cry dry. I am disgusted by myself frequently. What do you suggest I do? I wish I could go in on this. Plainly, he begins, I think it's important to focus on what we can't control. How do you... That's enough. You said that last week, man. He opens his mouth, releasing nothing more than a hot breath that I imagine smells like salmon. I will keep coming back here week after week as a condition of my release. So what do you suggest I do to ease my disillusionment? How would you like me to avoid my suicidal ideation in future? Really, Doc, I want to know. It's about time that you gave me the goods. He's staring slack-jawed at the oyster clock. What should I do now that I know I can't change the world? I leave 35 minutes early with an Ativan prescription in hand. Hilda.
That was Paige Walker. Writing is just the sweetest revenge, isn't it? I'm going to hand over to our final poet for this first section. I thought I'd close the section before we have our wee break with an acknowledgement of our tuakana. So Ruby was one of the tuakana over the Wanaka section. So we'll close with some words from Ruby and then I'll be back to explain the break and all of that stuff. Ruby Makoma.
Tēnā tātou, ko Ruby ahau, he reahau no nāpui me Ngāti Hine. Yeah, it's been a massive, massive blessing to be able to learn from and just hang out with and have cool chats with some of the coolest kaituhi in the whole world. So just, yeah, thank you guys so much for having us along this week. When Papa and Rangi split, I told my nephew that I'd always be 5 minutes, 5 hours a phone call away. When he asked how long the drive is between us, I considered saying there are 38 McDonald's restaurants between Manurewa and Gisborne. You, Baba, are 38 cheeseburgers away from me. But he's only 5, too young to explain boycott, divest, or the ACAB reframe, and so when Papa and Rangi split, it was hard to say that it'd always be 5 minutes, 5 hours, a phone call away. He's 5. And his favorite phrase is, I love you. And it's hard to teach anyone anything new when they are moved 38 McDonald's restaurants away from you. And I'm told children of incarcerated fathers grow a warped sense of time. My nephew is 5. And his favorite phrase is, I love you. And he says it like a name, like hello, like of course. I suspect he says it for the reactions of strangers, unaware of the weight. I hope there is a day he can say his father's name and have it only mean his name and not what he left behind. But when Papa and Rangi split, the woman in my family ashed out their half-such cigarettes and said goodbye with their eyes. Through the thick glass of disconnection we sipped between generations, a fractured grip, the papa who stands while the world keeps on spinning past shadows until the light is gone. And that story feels real familiar, like a cheeseburger, like 38 of them, and the ache that we thought we left decades ago is just the backsplash of a man's voice in the receiver, just the static in between the wave breaks. Our water-clogged chests heave themselves through and through and through and year in and year out. And back before Papa and Rangi split, we'd play time like there was no chance of it splitting. Chuck around tomorrows with the certainty of yesterday's and laugh till the moon shook and swayed on its perch. And at Kura, my nephew learnt Tane Mahuta broke the internal embrace with his body And suddenly the moon flashed red and blue. And there are no cheeseburgers between my nephew and the moon. And so maybe he thinks that it's closer. I don't really know how these things work because he's five. And his favorite phrase is, I love you. And at Kura, I learned that children of Papatuanuku and Ranginui became gods. And so I say his name like, and I love you, slow and gentle, so there is space for him to grow into the atua of his own agency, and one I must get used to seeing in flashes and flashes. And the last time I said I love you, I slipped and I said it like a goodbye. But my nephew knows these phrases are different, the splitting of final minutes. And so across the road, under the glow of this big cheeseburger-shaped moon, we yell, I love you, bye, I love you, bye, I love you, bye, I love you, bye.
That was Ruby McComa. Damn. Writing is not just a very sweet revenge, it's also a very, very sweet healing sometimes, isn't it? And sometimes it can be both at once. I'm going to read you one more sacrificial poem to set up our poets for the deepest success so that I don't throw Krasana under the bus and we're our sacrificial first poet from the Kaituhi group that were at the Wānaka. This poem is called Concavity. It's after a painting by Grant Wood, which you don't need to know that much about. He was like, I don't know, it's like a nature poem, nature painting, sort of, with some other, like, elements to it. It's called Concavity. I am in the shape of a horse, though you must know I am not a horse. I cannot run as fast as a horse, though I can keep up with the idea of a horse. I remain contented with being seen as a horse, although the first time I saw a horse, I was astonished by the shock of the horse, the self-recognition of my own image in the horse, self-portrait of myself who is not a horse. In the distance, trees, which don't know horse is a cultural category. I am chained to horse, but was born unchained to horse, and eventually learned that as a horse has legs and can run, I am very, very good at screaming myself hoarse. I'm going to invite our first writer of the second half up onto the stage. This writer is also the winner of the New Zealand Young Writers Festival Flash Fiction Competition for this year. So I'm going to hand over to Krasana Hanley.
Almost same height. Kia ora koutou katoa. Okay. This is my first time sharing my poetry to a crowd. Thank you. I needed that. Okay, this one's called Climate is a Conspiracy Theorist. They say climate's the one, but I don't swing that way. We went to the same school. Something of a conspiracy theorist? Always saying something didn't feel right. I took Greenhouse Effect out on a date, though. She's hot. Like, hot, hot. Touched her in all the right places. She wouldn't let me open a window, so I turned on the aircon. She was happy with that. I saw Climate on Tinder, actually. He had photos and t-shirt and jeans captured, this could be us, but you playing with the Greenhouse Effect. I filed a restraining order the next day. Climate shouldn't affect me now. Greenhouse Effect told me she loved me, and I'm thinking about asking her to marry me. My parents like her, but they say they don't know how to act when she's around. My friends tell me she's toxic. I don't feel it. We took a trip together. The weather was perfect. Record highs. After we left, the place got flooded. I guess word must have spread about the climate there. I'm not a meteorologist, but I think Greenhouse Effect is my perfect match. She loves my old car, the family farm, wants to see the world. I don't have to change for her. I saw Climate in town the other day. He seemed different. Maybe he got a haircut or started working out. He was definitely hotter.
That was Chrisanna Hanley. What a great example of the way that big ideas can become small ideas and small ideas can become big ideas, and these things coexist with each other, and the stories that we tell about certain things can become the stories we tell about other things. I'm going to hand over now to our next writer. It's Ella Sage.
Guys, isn't Josiah really, really funny? Can you imagine laughing until you cry when he's reading a poem at a random event in Ototahi? I can. Yeah, I guess this is me representing Ototahi and my growing love for the lit scene there, and which Josiah is a big part of, and this poem is after him because I laughed until I cried at Queer Horizons this year. It's called Desire, Etc. I laugh until I cry. Alia breaks, not her glass. It crunches underfoot, breaks the silence. Poets are quiet in this city, quiet until we're in the same room, in the same breath. I say there's only two letters between us, and she forgets my name. A rose would smell as sweet. A rose by any other name would smell as sweet. The botanics are calling me, winter wilted petals bearing the weight, dew, frost, loss as the day wears on. They have such depraved names to eyes like ours, seeing one and the same, desire, etc. Read them out till I laugh so hard I cry, and nothing breaks, and nothing breaks. I have another one, and it's serious. I read this one at the Wānaka, and I'd read a couple others, and everyone said, this is the one. So here we are. It's called Unmade. Before my life became measured by human needs and dreams, my mother told me to make beds, bodies, homes. She folded terse hospital corners in hopes she would be asked into caustic chlorinated cells. She got drunk on the faux power of belonging. I lost my grandfather's last words. Let unmade men in unmade beds hold me while I didn't cry and didn't cry and didn't cry. Obediently, her granddaughter will learn not to stay underfoot in the caustic way I was taught. Known prince, spiteful of unintelligible walls. At my decree, bloodlines diverge, make means to the same end. The cycle broken, we begin again. Thank you.
That was Alice Age. How awesome is it to be able to hear multiple works by the same writer right next to each other and be like, oh, there it is. That's the range, huh? I'm going to hand over to our next writer. It's Lily Kelleher.
Kia ora, everyone. This is my first time visiting Dunedin from Wellington. It's a pretty cool place. I've got two poems to read. The first one is called Yonic. It is after a 12th century French poem by Marie de France by the same name. I was a woman for 800 years. Tomorrow I will be a bird. Forget freedom, relive change, receive chance. Out the viscid wicks, in the sooted and soft-footed. Slippering around the chamber, fingering the thinly clinging yellow wallpaper. Solace, have solace in wishing, or will, or want. Weeping, with and without women. Hear the murmurings of the woman in the next room. Begin to unhook each stitch in the chain. Feel the soft skin rush of wing flap, the slippery talon, the sorrel-tinged plumage, then the slump, the soft sigh. I will have you as I please, she says. Freshly molted, six times over, six times the gilded knight visits her, six silvery tines piercing flesh, six rushings of blood, pounding, bound, from heart, from ancient hearth, from night-dressed bird breast. No more daily flights of fancy. No more feathering, recumbent in the fascination. No stickier embryo of sunrise. No more kissing and eating. No more placing the Corpus Christi into her soft mouth. Afflicted by care, no more youthful beauty. Together, golden, alone, old, withered. No more faints, four faints, no more microscopic deaths. Each time the hawk flies the nest. No more loneliness. Follow the blood through the meadow. Press the gold leaf into the damp wound of the forest bower. Press on, princess, pray. Emerge golden, burdened by new unburnished yoke, and wonder, drawn forth to her lover's pure gilded rest, alight the tips of the silver towers as gilded candles. Alight the gilded candles, arise death. Alight the senses of amethyst with resinous myrrh. No more love-struck, stricken down by hard-veined, harsh-sinewed men. No more illness, no more death. Strike the steeple from the neck with silvered breath. Return to the tower. Press into the iron spikes with bloodied hips. Grasping with fine-feathered, needling fingertips. Forged in fury. And naked, but for her shift. Beauty restored to her body and spirit. Behold, the shadow of a large bird emerges. This next one is very different. It's called A Funeral in Pauatahanui. One simmering twilight, Lola coaxed a tiny cat into the barn house's hot metal belly. It was sooty black in all legs, with round amber eyes like molten glass. She hid it behind a dusty old couch for weeks, feeding it off cuts of cold chicken and kisses. She dared to show us one day, grinning, tried herding it into my lap, but the little thing wouldn't trust a new hand, and so we spent all evening bashing through the creamy toto plumes, meowing up and down the river. 2. It was ice cold year round, that river, thrown into an evergreen shade by staunch kahikatea. We hefted boulders in one stagnant summer, learned to creep across like cats. Baby slipped in his bald Converse, sliced his palm clean open. He ran home wailing, injured hand curled into his belly, cradled like a dying bird. We flew up the hill after him, exhilarated, yelling out. Dad worked too hard, an ammonite fossil sunk in the stony face of the couch. We slipped into the kitchen wordlessly to rinse out the poor hand in the sink. We learned a lot that summer. How to carve a knife from a good stick. How to make damper bread and dip it in sugar. How to hurdle an electric fence. How to palpate rubbish bags for glass. How to put each other to bed. 3. We performed many rituals in those fields. The day the Xbox died, we gave it a water burial. Released it from the bridge into the frothing moor below. Tiger dredged the gravesite months later, fished out its rotten, rusted-out corpse for us to examine, crouched on the bank. Remember the day Puppy killed one of the chickens. While Dad researched plucking methods, we took turns touching her cooling body, solemnly delegating responsibilities. The boys pierced baked soil while we smoothed ruffled feathers, arranged pink daisies in Queen Anne's lace around her poor broken neck. We learnt a lot that summer. How to mount a horse alone, how to shoot a gun, how to touch something small and alive, how to hold each other. Thank you.
That was Lily Kelleher. I think it's a sign that a poet has serious page cred when you can hear the form when it's not on the page. Eh? I think that's quite amazing. Okay, we are going to hand over now to our fourth poet of this half. This is Sahara Pohatutro.
Hope that works. This is my first time reading my work to people. So I am very nervous, and if you see me shaking, no, you didn't. And I have titled this piece Goosey after my grandmother's nickname. You were a matriarch, a mother, a grandmother, a Poe. I never thought to ask you the questions I have now. I didn't have them then. I didn't care. Now that you're gone, all these questions come to mind, like why and what and how, and I regret not having these questions before. Maybe it's the historian in me. Secondary sources don't compare when I had you a hug, a phone call away. Not enough in my own personhood yet to recognize what I had. What a cliche. I was so consumed by my angsty adolescence that I didn't even think to have questions until you were gone. Now I carry your name within my name and your ever-knowing smile in my mind, but I have lost the sound of your voice to the white noise of aging. The $50 notes pressed firmly into hands at the yearly visit, the dogs and rabbits, the garden, your smoked eel. They ask where I fuck a papa back to, and I want to say your weatherboard house in Linwood. On the same McLean Street, I passed on the bus and said, my nan lives there, but didn't stop by. Your daughters have their own mokapuna now, and they watch them grow like you did us with fear and love, and your sons. One day I will forgive your son for leaving. The Kazis trade memories like Pokemon cards. And I know there are stories in these memories. I feel them in my bones, but they do not reach my tongue, and I worry they never will. And my insides will be haunted. My heart, my kidney, my liver, my lungs. So I carry your legacy like we carried your casket. Forward with honor and grief. And I will sew your reo into my lips, your strength into my muscles, and hug my haunted skeleton, wishing it were you.
That was Sahara Pohatutro. The bravery in a kind of direct emotional address in poetic work is really quite an extraordinary skill to learn to access. And I think we're so lucky to be able to access it here in this communal environment this evening. I was sitting there and I noticed this table, which looks lovely, but I was also like, it looks like it needs some like dramaturgical use. So I just thought I'd do that. We've got four more poets to hear from, and we're now going to hear from Toria Scott Fife.
Kia ora koutou, ko Toria ho, ko kaitahu, ko kati mamoia ho. Thank you so much for all your words. I last minute changed what I'm going to read because I was inspired by all the poetry, and so I'm like going to read a piece that has a little bit of poetry in it. Misdirection. Who is it that knocks at my door? Last night the wind was as loud as the sea, blowing fog. I could get lost in any direction. Said the Ruru, I think I lost my eyesight when I flew into the headlights in the windy morning dark. Still and silent then, Ruru. Thick feathers cannot keep your Māori warm. I will watch the stars for you, Ruru, and carry on. My grandpa was a rural vet in Hikurangi, Northland. When I was little, he came and looked after us while our mum was in hospital. My main memory of it is of him buying us Jimmy's mince pies from the dairy and not letting me put tomato sauce on my piece of luncheon. He visited again when I was 13 or so. We had an owl chick which we were looking after that had been abandoned. The owl flew around the house and liked to have its head scratched. My grandpa called it Wall. It liked to sit on his head and try and gaze into his eyes. We stayed up late, spent the evenings catching moths that battered against the brightly lit windows. My English teacher said it didn't matter that I hadn't done my homework. We took the owl outside one night and it took off over the neighbour's roof into the deep blue of the night sky. I was sad, so sad to have let our friend go. But what life for an owl to live in a house? I turned to go back inside. Look, my dad called, in the hushed sort of voice one uses at night. The owl swooped back to us in a silent, graceful dive. It seemed full of excitement. Its wings had soft burrs along the edges. It didn't make a sound. After that, we left our windows and doors open all the time, and the owl would come and go as it pleased. My grandpa liked doing cryptic crosswords. We would do puzzles from the paper together, but I could never get the cryptic ones. Now I can, but not all the time. One of our hens we called Little Goose. She was grey and white speckly and had a top knot, and she honked like a goose. She laid green eggs. She had a prolapsed oviduct while Grandpa was visiting, and he did surgery on the picnic table with a bit of detergent and got the egg out and her insides back in. He was very calm and matter-of-fact about it. My dad tells stories about going with his dad to various call-outs. I think it was usually cows and horses, but we don't have those here. Chickens will do. We called him Grandpa because he always had something to say about something. He had strong opinions about climate change. So did I. He was good at telling people off. I sulked. He had the complete transactions of the Royal Society. They are big, dusty books, bound nicely, full of tiny writing about everything in the world, and they live in our hallway. I went to see him in Northland while he was dying. He was skin stretched on bones, nothing in between. He couldn't move much except his face. He smiled when I came in and gave me a wink when my parents were being embarrassing. I told him I climb mountains now and study alpine invertebrates. He said, "Eh?" a lot to try and follow what we were saying. He made sure we knew that he was still with it by saying words like parabola and hydration at relevant moments. He slept most of the time. I think he was scared to die, but maybe that's just me superimposing my own feelings. The Fifes are a stubborn bunch. The last day I saw the owl, it woke me up at 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning. I was tired and grumpy and picked it up and threw it out the window. It looked taken aback and betrayed. It flew into the trees, all ruffled. Then we went to the island for the weekend, and when we came back, it didn't fly in our windows again. My grandpa died yesterday morning at 2:14 a.m. I was in a tent in the north branch of the Rootburn, Te Komama, as a nor'wester front blew in. Sheets of wind and rain funneled down the belly. I woke in the early hours and couldn't get back to sleep for a while. My body ached. My eyes were puffy from squinting in the white clag on the bright snow. Tent shaking, the wind and the rain. Our tent is a good one, and it withstood all the weather. Held safe in the middle of mountains till morning. Still and silent then, Grandpa. Stubborn bones will break down after all. I will watch the stars for you, Grandpa, and carry on.
It was Tonya Scott Fife. There was an extraordinary piece about the ways that we try to read in, and we do read in and hear from other living beings, both non-human and human, and I think speaks to all of the things we've been talking about during this evening, about the ways that writing gives us a way in to the lives of other beings, human, non-human, non-living even. We've got three poets left, and next... three writers left, sorry. I really need to stop doing that. We've got three kaituhi remaining to hear from for the evening. I'm going to hand over now to Aroha Witinitara.
Hello, everyone. I have two poems to read tonight. The first one is one that I've been working on over the course of the Wānaka, and so because of that, it doesn't have a title yet. In Te Ao Māori, all things, tangible and non-tangible, all things living and non-living, are deeply interconnected. Our Māori linking us in a wide web of attachment. That's why I get so mad with my flatmates when they don't do the chores. The Māori of the house sings a hot, sticky song in protest, and I can't ignore it. We know these things, they are all true. But if we think deeper for a moment, there's a way to blur the boundaries between each fragmented thing even further. All things are small parts of a larger whole, like the threads that make up the warp and weft of fabric, dependent on one another to keep from unravelling. You are constituted by your relationships with other entities, which is to say, you are everything that touches you and cannot be extracted from that context. Kupu te ao, one word is the entire world. Kupu te ao. The entire world can be contained within just one word. That is the... the second poem is a fan favourite, and some people have heard it like four times, but it's okay. This one's called I'm Standing at the Edge of the World, Looking into the Time Spiral. I'm standing at the edge of the world, looking into the time spiral. A dark scene punctuated with stars. My feet planted in a cloud of stardust, white hot with potential. The core, where the timeline starts from. White mark against the black page, branching outward, eternally. A looping structure, folding in on itself and growing. Time multiplies. Time disappears into the horizon, maturing with the passage of. Time swells like an infection, blistered, weeping. Time heals all wounds. Time is like a big juicy onion, layer on layer on layer. I feel that I could gather all those layers up around my shoulders like a wise feather cloak. Knowledge is protection. It feels good to think of each moment as a fixed point on just one of those ever-widening circles, a small speck moving away, caught up in the flow of things, as we all are, riding along on the slow current like a lazy river, around and around and around. Thank you.
That was Araha Witinitara. I think a sign of wonderful poetry is when a poem ends and you go, oh yeah, that's the end, which I had in both of those contexts, after numerous surprises throughout the text, which is a really interesting experience to have and something that poetry, when it's working at its best, really can do. We're about to come to the end of our evening, and here's how it's going to work. I'm going to hand over in a moment to our final kaituhi, Nick Tepa, who is the current New Zealand Young Writers Festival writer-in-residence at the Robert Lord Cottage. Nick, you have to come to me after for a short one-sentence compliment about your work, because this is the last time that people are hearing from me. But what will happen is Nick will come up here, Nick will share his work, and then after that, there's an all-new original Waiata by the cohort this year that we're going to sing to close off. So thank you all for coming. I wanted to acknowledge New Zealand Young Writers Festival once again, particularly the mahi of Nick, Rohina, Ruby, and then also the incredible work, the incredible stuff that we've heard tonight from everyone seated over on this side. So one last big round of applause as we welcome Nick Tepa.
Kia ora koutou. Not going to read all these pages. I just didn't know what I was going to do. So, okay. This is called Lizard's Moko. Moko. The skin is dry and leathery, baked in parched air by an uncaring sun. Skin cracked, blood warmed. Distant whanauka of a far-off kingitanga, scuttling across an alien planet. Moko. Trekking deep into farmland, plunging into wounds in the whenua whose name has been forgotten. Playing in the mud, up to our knees in this stuff. The hot breath of a desert summer boiling us in our shells. Portable umu. The only reprieve from the deadly heat, the roar of an engine and the speed it brings. Air buffeting us on saddleback into the cracks in our armor, cold, sticky sweat. And the mud? Heavenly. Spraying up our backs as it is torn from the body of Papatua Anuku. A rokoa for our burning bodies. Wounds that will heal. The air cools, and the pale blue of summer gives way to navy, dark, purple, violet, violent skies. Haitohu o te hokika. So we retreat. Sometimes I imagine that land now, emptied of our noise and smell and heat and bravado, emptied of the hard rubber, ripping endlessly back and forth until deep scars ran across her kauai. We were here, that moko red, and the moko returned once we had fled. Yeah. I've got a poem that was the Friday poem yesterday, or I've got a waiata that I've written. So, well, I'll do one. We got. Kia ora.
Ki te wehe atu, ki te moana, kia mau ki tō manawa. Kaua e rite, ki te tūnaroa, o ki maira. Kia rere atu, ki te tau whenua, ko te titi hei tauira. Pera I tera, manura katira, o ki mai ra. Toku ipo, toku manawa, toku fatsukura, o takaroa. Ia koe kore noho tatana, maku te whare e whakauera. Ka tio tōku kākau apanoa, ka hoki mai rā. Nā reira, hoki mai rā.
Kia ora koutou.
Young Writers Festival welcomes young writers aged 15 to 35 of all kinds to celebrate a diverse range of wordsmithing, including slam poetry, playwriting, songwriting, short fiction, novels, zines, screenwriting, poetry, journalism, blogging, critical content creation, podcasts, review writing, and more. It's Aotearoa's only literary festival focused solely on young writers, and it's held right here in Otipoti, Dunedin. This live-recorded podcast series from the 2025 New Zealand Young Writers Fest is brought to you by Otago Access Radio and supported by Dunedin UNESCO City of Literature. Join us in celebrating Aotearoa's next generation of literary talent.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.